Welcome to the Sober Rebel Bite Size series for January. This episode is no more than 20 minutes, and there will be one a day throughout the month of January. I've been doing this podcast now for nearly 2 years, and in that time I've spoken to so many amazing guests. So I thought it would be a lovely idea this month to revisit some of the highlights of those conversations every day throughout January to keep you focused on why you're doing this. Now, we all know that going sober isn't easy. It may not be your first attempt. You may find moments of frustration, but in those moments, that's your opportunity to challenge any thoughts or beliefs that you hold about alcohol and to turn your focus to the benefits you're going to gain. And so that's why I've spent time listening to every single episode and cherry-picking the best bits. I'm obviously going to signpost you here to revisit the Dry January series I did last year, where I focused one episode a day on topics that were relevant to sobriety, advice, tips. It's packed full of useful information for you, and it's a really good listen alongside this podcast. It's still relevant, it's still incredibly good and comprehensive. So if you'd like to look back at that, just head back to this time last year on your podcast feed. And so today's episode that I have cherry-picked a perfect section from is with my dear friend Leah. In the main episode, she talked about the three areas that have improved for her in sobriety being self-love, endorphins, and letting go of anger. In this snippet, we talk about other people. And there's a wonderful phrase that Leah uses, is that your opinion of me is none of my damn business. It was a wonderful conversation. We talked about how other people project their own insecurities onto others, and how in the sobriety process, she found new ways to tap into and release endorphins, including exercise and getting outside and walking with her beautiful dog, Hector, and how she let go of anger in the process, how drinking had stopped being fun for her towards the end. I hope you enjoy it.
Your dopamine receptors, you have the motorway ones, which are the alcohol ones. So it's a straight line, really easy to get to your dopamine, quick hits of dopamine through the use of alcohol. And other routes are more like the country, windy, bendy roads that are more difficult to traverse, and therefore you don't use them as much. And then suddenly you take alcohol out of the equation, and you find that that motorway, the easiest way to get your dopamine, is gone. And what do I do to find my happiness? What do I do to kick off those happy hormones in my brain? And how do I do that? So it was a learning curve, as a lot of sobriety is. There was a lot of learning in it, lots of trial and error.
So what did you find then that brought you that dopamine? So you need to make those little windy country roads now a new motorway, yeah. Almost, don't you?
I go out hiking. I get out into nature as much as possible. I have my little sidekick, Hector, who's my little working Cocker Spaniel. If anybody ever needs an excuse to go out and exercise more, get a working Cocker Spaniel.
Oh, they need a lot of walking. They really do.
We can quite easily do 8 or 9 miles without him getting tired. It does. If I go over 10 miles, it means I'll have a nice quiet afternoon because he'll sleep through most of it. We're lucky enough to be near the New Forest, so we can go there quite a lot. There's lots of different routes that we do. I like anything that involves some water. So if there's some sort of stream, there's some water I can touch, or, you know, I like to get out and touch a few trees or leaves or something, just something that is real. Getting out in nature is my big thing. Yeah, one of the other things that I have taken to doing is, with the great British weather the way that it is, when it's absolutely chucking it down, I will go, and I do regularly go to the gym and lift weights. It's a very quick way to get lots of endorphins. I really enjoy it. I feel really strong because I solo hike quite a lot. I'm now strong enough that I could protect myself and
Well
also
done.
also the dog, Hector, because he's the light of my life.
Yeah, you've got to protect the dog. The dog's not there to protect
He's the
you.
most important. Oh God, yeah, he's a spaniel. Like
He'd just go and kiss them.
he'd sell me for a spoonful of peanut butter. But yeah, I'm strong enough now that I could protect both of us. I know it's common sense and we all know it, but exercise makes people happier.
And it does. And when you're drinking, you don't
It's easy
feel
for a
like
long time.
exercising.
Never. The only exercise I did when I was drinking was dancing, usually on tables, drunk. Honey, I was the epitome of class.
Don't think I've ever danced. I don't think I could get up on a table now. I'm too old. I'd still give it a shot, though, sober, just to prove you still can do it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would still dance on a table sober. I still dance like a
You just
lunatic
wouldn't
now.
fall off.
I just don't fall over. Or walking to bars. Those are the only things I would do, the only exercise I would do when I was drinking. Since stopping, I like having a really strong body.
It's really strange, isn't it? I'm exactly the same. And I would never have said at any point, well, I want to be strong. I want to
Yeah.
be strong. It was always, I want to be thin. I want to be
Thin.
smaller.
Thin and attractive. Well,
Yeah.
I don't care if you find me attractive, quite frankly. I think I'm gorgeous.
You bloody are. You are absolutely gorgeous.
For what I paid for this space, I should be. All the money I save from not drinking has gone straight in here.
Well, it's bloody good work, I have to say. Looks amazing.
Thank you very much. And I feel really strong in myself. I want to have big muscles, and if I, I want to be able to flex my arms and have like a real, for to me, like it's really sexy to have a really like muscular back, which I thought, gosh,
Yeah.
I can't imagine like 4 years ago if I'd have said that, I'd been like, what? Disgusting human.
Well, I know there's all that talk, isn't there? We don't want women to be muscly. I'm like, do you know what? I don't care. I don't care what anybody
Again,
else wants.
this is what I mean. People's opinion is none of your damn business. If they want to have an opinion about me, then that is absolutely fine. That doesn't impact me in the slightest. And I think it's an awareness that it's really common for the way people feel about themselves is so often how they then speak about other people.
Yeah.
So people who are really hypercritical and they're really negative and they're really judgmental, and it's not a natural automatic thought. It's something that you have to think about and ask yourself the question, what's going on in their life that they have to be that way? What's going on for them? And that's not to say that you can't set a boundary. Boundaries are really important. Boundaries are there to facilitate relationships, not to end them.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer in that. Have your boundaries, set your boundaries, but understanding that when people speak negatively about you, it's often just a reflection of how they feel about themselves. And I know that because I used to be horrid.
I can't
So
believe it
horrid.
looking at you now.
Honestly, I love the fact that there are so many people in my life now that only know me as sober.
Yeah.
There's a little handful, a little pocket of people that knew me before, during, and after. My best friend Colleen is the most patient human on the planet. She has been my best friend for, I think, either 18 or 19 years, and she has put up with some real shit from me, and she never ever gave up on me. And she was a vital part of my support network when I first went sober, and I will forever be grateful to her. Her, my mum, and Tesco's fizzy water got me through that first bit.
Well done, Tesco's. Other brands are available.
Other, not sponsored, not sponsored. They're just the only ones that do
They
this
don't pay
particular
me. They
flavor.
don't get an exclusive mention.
They don't.
Not yet, anyway.
There's one specific flavor that I like, so, and they're the only ones that do it, so I buy it en masse.
So that strength thing is really. I was at the gym yesterday and I was lifting weights and I was like, I'm going to go up a level. I'm going to go up. And it is so empowering when you've spent years ignoring the niggles and pains in your body, and then all of a sudden you're pushing to see what your body can do, and your body's responding, it's getting stronger. It is such a high.
When I was at the gym on Wednesday, I was training legs, which as a hiker, my legs are very strong. And a man got on the leg press after me and reduced the weight. And
Yes.
it was a beautiful moment. Like quite a significant jump down. I thought, feel quite good.
Brilliant. So that is your way you get your endorphins now, which are brilliant. Exercise and getting outside and sunshine, yeah. Fresh air, walking the dog, connection to nature.
Just
absolutely
be, actually,
bang
and
on.
Just being close to animals. That's the other little takeaway from that. I rescued Hector just before I got sober. I rescued him when he was 7 months old. So he's been with me through my entire sobriety journey. I've had him just over 4 years. Hand on heart, he saved my life. There have been
so sweet.
many afternoons or evenings, or actually any time of day, quite frankly, that I have sat on the kitchen floor and sobbed and wailed to the sky or whatever higher power there is. Why me? Why can't I be normal? Because sobriety has not made me any less dramatic. And he's been there. He sits with me. He stands across my chest and does like compression massage on my chest for me when I'm really, really panicking. And he saved my life. I rescued him, but he saved my life.
And that is beautiful.
And animals give us, I think it's, there's a, this it's being with animals gives you serotonin, one of the happy hormones.
The feel good hormones. Yeah.
Really easily triggered by being close to animals. So yeah, Hector.
So that's your second plus point then. So what's your third?
For me, one of the biggest takeaways of sobriety is letting go of the anger. Towards the end of my drinking, and I do refer to it as my drinking career, which I don't know is perhaps the best way to refer to it, but I do feel like it was a part of almost like a chore by the end, a job that I had to do. I would get very angry all the time. By the end, gone was the party girl. Gone was the fun part of me. And what was left was just this very angry, shouty, really unpleasant person to be around, who would find fault with everything, was very critical of others, very judgmental. And yeah, it's not nice to recognize those parts of yourself when tackling some of the emotional side of sobriety, but it is really important. And it's really important to look at those and look at the reasons behind that. So why was I angry? Why did I feel the way I felt about others? And it was essentially because of how I felt about myself. And I felt a huge injustice. We've spoken obviously about my dad and losing my dad. And at 26, you shouldn't be burying a parent.
No.
You know, at 24, you shouldn't be ringing hospitals to try and find out where he is, because you know that he's probably in a hospital somewhere because he's gone missing. You know, at 25, you shouldn't be visiting him in an induced coma. Those things shouldn't happen. And I felt that the world was being very unkind to me. And that made me really angry. And I would look at people and say, well, look at you with your nice relationship. No, I can't have one of those. Look at you with your parents going out to dinner. I can't do that. It took me a long time to come to terms with everything that had happened and why I felt the way that I felt. But essentially, as soon as I stopped drinking, I stopped being so angry. Like
almost
overnight, I woke up and went, oh, I should probably just deal with these things now rather than projecting them out onto everyone else.
Yeah. I would say that I was just the way you are towards the end of my drinking. I was starting to get hard to live with.
Yeah.
And what was happening in our marriage was we were both becoming hard to live with.
Do you feel that's improved now?
100%.
Wow.
We have got a really strong relationship. We've been through quite a lot. And as a married couple, I would say we've got a good marriage. But what was happening last year was that we were squabbling more, silly, squabbly, misunderstandings, miscommunications, people huffing, that kind of thing. You know, not me, obviously, I'm perfect, but he was huffing.
I hear you, girl.
But yeah, so we were just, obviously it was both of us. I'm only joking. But yeah, we were both just in a place of meh. It's just, I can't describe it. We were just functioning and just had a baby.
Going through the motions.
And, you know, and the stresses and strains of a baby that doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
As well. So you were putting alcohol in that mix and you were thinking, oh, well, I'll relax now. And you know, so it wasn't like we were drinking lots and lots and lots, but the little arguments, the squabbles were getting out of control and we stopped drinking and they went completely because they'd only started to appear last year out of tiredness and exhaustion.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a massive, massive change, but also with friendships and things.
It's a learning experience for everybody. But it isn't just for you and I, it's for everyone who's around us as well. And everyone who's got used to us being a certain way and used to certain behaviours, perhaps even behaviours they didn't really like, but they just tolerate.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's a ripple effect. So there's things that change for you. And then there's also things that change for everybody else around you as well, which is really interesting.
How do your friends deal with it?
A lot of my friends initially, they were very cautious. People wouldn't drink around me to start with. And it was like, oh, don't drink around Leah because she might fall off the wagon. And over time, and where they've seen me in lots of different circumstances and scenarios, they've got a lot more comfortable. But to be honest, my friends' drinking has significantly reduced. Partly as a result, and they'll say themselves, partly as a result of my drinking reducing. And well, my drinking hasn't reduced because I don't drink at all anymore. My drinking's at zero, and theirs is probably significantly reduced because of that. Not because they feel uncomfortable drinking around me, but because they don't feel the need to.
Yeah.
Drinking for me. And drinking for people who identify as having a drink problem or issues with alcohol in particular, it doesn't do for me what it does for people who don't have addiction problems, people who don't have that switch in their brain that says you need to do this to excess. Drinking didn't do that for me. It was just a way to seek absolute oblivion.
Yeah, you just didn't want to feel or think or...
Yeah, So I didn't actually enjoy it. And now that I'm not there pushing everyone to drink, because I was very pushy with drinking, there are some friends that inevitably fell away and fell off the radar for me. They weren't interested and they were fair weather drinking buddies.
Yeah.
My friends have all reduced their drinking. I have endless proud moments when people come to me as a result of being very public about sobriety and public about my journey and how things have improved for me. I've had quite a few people come forward and message me privately to say, I think I have a problem too. I think I need to cut down. I think I need to be sober. Is there anything you can do to help me? Can you recommend support groups? Can you recommend podcasts, books, Instagram pages, anything possible? So I have a pre-written script out in my notes section of my phone of books that I use to start with, some information about finding local support groups, some Instagram pages that I relied on really heavily at the start. I always give them a link. I have a sobriety Spotify playlist. Of songs that are either tongue-in-cheek things about being sober or actually songs about being sober or songs that in my head link somehow to sobriety. Because at the start, I'd get cravings and I'd get intense withdrawal. I'd plug in my headphones, take myself off for a walk and listen to that. And 30 or 45 minutes later, those cravings are usually gone.
This episode was first aired on the 22nd of August. And is marked episode 2. And just to remind you, if you head to my website, louisaevans.com, you will find the Sober Resilience course, where you can use code RESILIENCE544 to get a massive 30% off. You'll also find a range of hypnosis recordings on so many subjects, from confidence boosting through to enjoying exercise or finding weight loss easy, alongside ones to support your sobriety. If you use the code SOBERREBEL, all one word, you'll be able to buy one, get one free on all of those recordings. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of my guests over this last couple of years for their openness and honesty. And the podcast will be back in its regular fortnightly slot very shortly. I'm currently recording some amazing episodes for you. I hope you have a great day.